Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding, His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life, it's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious, think well, advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and today we have in store for you a lot. It's going to be an incredible 30 minutes because you're going to get to hear a nine-minute talk from one of my favorite people, Justin Dillon. He's somewhat of an activist, but with structure around him. He doesn't just talk about these ideas that he cares about. He actually goes out and gets them done, and I think you're going to be amazed at some of the things he's accomplished in just the last decade since I've known him. He showed up at our first Q conference in Q 2007, and then he was back with us at Q 2017. He has a new book releasing called A Selfish Plan to Change the World. And so I want you to hear his nine-minute talk that he delivered on the final day at Q 2017, and then we're going to follow that up with me sitting down with him for a conversation to just unpack some of what he's thinking about, a little more of his story, so that you can see the trajectory of his life, how he's thinking about these things, and how God's using him in an amazing way. So let's listen in to Justin Dillon.
A few years ago, my son, who was 3 years old at the time, was having trouble sleeping in his own room. And so he was begging us to come into our bed. So my wife said, you know, I'm going to go downstairs. You take him. I put him in bed. I thought I got him asleep. I started falling asleep. And then all of a sudden, I heard this little voice through the tunnel of slumber. Dada. Yes, son. Dada. What is it, son? It's important to note that at this point in his life, I was teaching him about how to make eye contact with people when you talk to him. So this was like a practice run for him. So, Dada. Yes, son. What is it, son? Dada. I smell chaos. What? You smell what? I smell chaos. And he flipped his eyes like something and just went back to sleep. I don't know about you. I don't want to smell chaos at 3 a.m. or 4 p.m. or any point in my life. In fact, I was raised probably like you to avoid chaos and to build certainty in our lives. But the reality is the script that was written over our lives actually involves chaos. It actually involves the chaos of others. Because all the way back when the script of your life was written, and when I say back, like in the beginning, you know, like beginning, like Genesis 1 beginning, when the infinite spoke into the finite, God reached into the finite and into the chaos and did what? Spoke order and a cosmos and light. Despite what we've been taught to believe, we were made for chaos, and God has been embracing and going after chaos and has invited everyone who's ever walked this planet to do the same. The promise that God gives us in the chaos of others is like a toy surprise that you have to work for. And everybody wants this toy surprise. Everybody here wants this toy surprise. In fact, we've all been talking about this toy surprise. We listen to Moody podcasts so that we can get this toy surprise, the toy surprise of purpose for our lives. And God has created this eternal, infinite axiom that we find who we are and we find our purpose in the problems of others. Now, as Gates said, for the last 10 years, I've been embracing the chaos of over 40 million people who work without pay under threat of violence, are economically exploited and unable to walk away, living in modern day slavery. Specifically, the people that work to make our lives awesome. It's the young girls who are mining in a mica mine, the mineral that becomes sparkles that we get to put on our faces and our cars. It's the Cambodian man who goes down to get a job and is thrown onto a boat so we can have shrimp salad. These are the people's chaos that I've embraced and put into my life. And what's crazy about chaos is that it's not a single serve. The reality is, chaos is something that we can all embrace. And I've had the opportunities for the last few years to create films, and as he was talking about creating the website, I meet with churches and companies and institutions, all of which I get to share the participation. We've built websites and and now a business software that companies can look for slavery in their supply chains. And I've been going around for years sharing this, and every time I go somewhere, someone comes up to me. I know the look. I know the look, because their eyes are glazed. I know what they're going to ask me. How can I help? I want to help. Now, what they're not asking me is, where can I donate? What's your social media handle? Can I give you my email address? They're asking the infinite question. What is my purpose? How can I take what's inside of me and apply it to the chaos of others? That's why I wrote the book. But more specifically, what I have to tell these people is, I actually don't know. Because the script over your life that was written before time, in indelible, infinite ink, onto the finite pages of your life, is your script. No one else can tell you what your purpose is. No church, no school, no company can tell you what your purpose is. It is yours to find when you go out and smell the chaos of other people's problems. Now, chaos doesn't have to be slavery. It can be the PTSD of veterans. It can be the spider web of the foster care system. It can be the people living next door or working four jobs just to afford to live in your neighborhood who don't have time to do the homework for their kids. Chaos comes in many forms, but it is required for our lives to be able to find purpose. Now, as I said before, the purpose and your desire for purpose is an entire industry, and everybody wants to get at your purpose, and everybody wants to tell you what your purpose is, and yet no one can. And there are several counterfeits to try to tell you what your purpose is, and I'm going to tell you about two of them today. The first counterfeit is acquisition. It's like happiness. If I acquire enough things, then I'll find what I think is my purpose. If I get enough followers on social media, if I find the right mate, if I get enough commas in my bank account, I'll have purpose. No, you won't. You'll have happiness. Happiness is awesome, but it's single serve. See, happiness is taking things from the outside and bringing it in. But when you say, how can I help? What is my purpose? Where's that ink that's written over my life? You're saying, what can come out of me and go out into the world? As Walt Whitman says, how can I contribute a verse and create a beautiful song and know, oh me, oh man, that I matter? Happiness will never get you there. In fact, a solitary path of happiness is scientifically proven to lead you to narcissism. No one wants that. Then you become that guy at the party no one wants to talk about because you only talk about yourself. The second counterfeit that is preying upon our purpose is association. We live in a world now where we can build a social profile and never leave our lives. We can pull equity from causes and ideas and push those around ourselves and pull this association in. We can get a return without ever making an investment. And there's a phenomenon for this. You're going to be hearing about it more and more. If there's anything you're going to remember from what I say today, remember these words. Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling is a phenomenon that's happening in our culture today where we get to post out to morality or a cause and try to bring that back. In fact, someone just tried to do that about a month ago. A large beverage company virtue signaled to all of us to draw on our purpose by creating a model who's in the scene she's modeling, and she just sees a riot, people fighting for the chaos of others outside. You've seen this commercial, and she runs into the riot and the chaos of others and the cause of others, and she ends it, God bless her, with a bubbly soda, carbonated drink, and hands the soda to the riot police. And that's when the riot started online, because for the first time in many months, the internet got what it wanted. It agreed on something. It agreed that you can't virtue signal the purpose in our lives because it's sacred and infinite and it's highest to our soul. We can't just associate our ways into purpose. It requires us to step into the chaos of others. I'm not the only one who believes this. Dr. King, when he spoke to Oberlin College, told everyone in the audience, I am not who I am supposed to be until you are who you're supposed to be. And you're not who you're supposed to be until the person next to you is who they're supposed to be. We find ourselves when we give ourselves away. Our identity is bound. What he went on to say in his letters from Birmingham jail, we are bound in an inescapable network of mutuality. What happens to one directly? A young girl with prehistoric tools in a mine, picking sparkles. Happens to another indirectly. The same girl, the same age, putting those sparkles on to build her social currency. We're connected. We're connected. Chaos isn't something that we should run away from. We can follow the infinite script given to us by our Creator to push into chaos and to change the world from here. And I'm so excited that all of you will have the chance to do that. I hope the book gives you a chance to do that. And I can't wait to see what happens tomorrow when you wake up and smell the chaos. Thank you.
Justin, it is so great to continue our conversations. Thanks for just being a part of this Q community, for your tireless and faithful work to try to advance good to so many people.
Oh, thanks, Gabe.
Well, you have been truly a tireless advocate for so many, but you do it in such a creative way. And this is what I think people at Q just resonate with, is that we're talking about the idea of changing culture, of trying to do something good to contribute to the common good. And that all of it, you know, for most of us, it can just sound a little heady, a little intellectual, a little like we're just talking about ideas. And what I love about how you take on that is you go, man, I'm going to go do something. I'm going to make it practical. I'm going to get people involved. And that idea of creating culture, when I think of you, Justin, I just think of somebody who's taken very seriously that the ideas you care about, it's not okay for them to just live on as ideas. I mean, we know ideas do matter. They do shape the way people think, but you always force yourself to push it to the next level. And you've done that in several ways. I mean, I think, you know, one of the great ways you did it, like early on, was creating this amazing deal called Slavery Footprint that millions and tens of millions of people have experienced. And for listeners who've never heard of that, will you talk a little bit about why you even created that? Tell us a little bit about what that is.
Yeah, Slavery Footprint is a website, slaveryfootprint.org. It's a website that you can go to answer a very provocative question, which is, do you want to know how many slaves work for you? And the backstory behind that question was a phone call from the State Department to me in about 2010, after the State Department had seen some of the work that I had done in around the human trafficking slavery space. They wanted to see if they could help fund and support a project that can help everyday consumers understand their own footprint when it comes to forced and child labor in the products that they use every day. So I took that on as like I asked for creative control and ownership, and they were really gracious and gave it, and then also just gave incredible support to create this website that is less of a bummer calculator and more of a way to understand our story as individuals and how our stories and the power of our stories and how they affect other people's lives. And of course, the end of this really beautiful website that we were fortunate enough to win a Cannes Lion that year and a South by Southwest. We won South by Southwest Interactive. It was a very impactful website. But the end of this website, as you go through it, you answer questions about your life, and what it's calculating is how many forced laborers or slaves it takes to produce your lifestyle. And once you get that answer, I mean, we didn't think a lot of people would want that answer, and like you said, a lot of people did. Then it gives you a way to be able to kind of look at your life a little bit different. And you see how connected you are.
Yeah.
The hope for that is that we will move on beyond awareness into some type of action, and even just a way of seeing our lives as connected. For me, success was helping people see how powerful they truly are, just because of where they live and what they get to buy.
Well, and Justin, this began 2007. You were talking about sex trafficking and really a proponent of raising awareness about this horrific thing that's happening in the world. But most people never heard of it then. I mean, this is the front edge of a movement that now is so popular, almost, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't know that this is an incredible injustice. I know we're not at a point where it's ended, but certainly you have to be satisfied with how the awareness campaign and how much governments now have gotten involved in their laws and how city officials, police departments are thinking about this. I mean, would you look back and despite the fact that it hasn't completely eradicated this, would you look back and say, man, I'm pretty pleased with where in a decade this conversation has gone?
I am. And really, if I had like 6 months to stop running and really look at it, I think my perspective would even be more amazed. I mean, you've got everyone from the Pope to the president now making it a priority. And not only like from an awareness, but like looking at their own, you know, supply chains. I mean, like, yeah. It's interesting when a movement moves out of kind of enthusiasm and into pragmatism, which is kind of where it starts to get boring. You know, when you talk about supply chains and laws and stuff, for average people like me, you get a little lost. But that's exactly where it gets real, because now you're kind of getting underneath the surface and you're changing the way the world works. The world works differently today than it did 10 years ago. And it's going to be even more different 10 years from now. That's because people got on board and this became personal for them. And they wanted to help people that they didn't even know and would never meet. And that to me is, that's just really, I'm just blessed to be able to be in, you know, some little dot of a pixel in that story.
People are very individualistic these days. It's all about me. It's all about, you know, what can I do for myself, for my own comforts? And you're essentially kind of standing in the face of that, saying, this is not what our life's supposed to be about. You know, it's not just about us. It's not just about doing what makes my life better. But in fact, part of what we need to be thinking about is also the other person. And when you do that, the weirdest thing happens. It starts to actually make your life better. Can you describe a little bit about just that thesis? I mean, you lay this out so well in your new book, A Selfish Plan to Change the World, which is already so counterintuitive that a selfish plan could somehow change the world. But describe for people kind of what you mean by that.
Well, I just believe that there's two types of poverties in the world. There's a poverty of means, which is what we're talking about, at least what I've been working on when it comes to slavery or extreme poverty or lack of access to justice or healthcare. That's a poverty of means. Like you just need the means to survive. And, you know, roughly, you know, a little bit more than half of us, of the 7.5 billion of us in the world are really suffering under a poverty of means. The rest of us have, you know, to be honest, we have the luxury of asking existential questions like, who are we? And do people like me? And where do I belong? And what's my life all about? And that kind of creates its own poverty, which I call a poverty of meaning. And many of us are living below the poverty line of meaning because it comes out in the way that we operate with one another and the way that we look to all the different types of devices and communication devices to find some type of meaning or some type of affirmation. So we're all kind of living in this scarcity principle of meaning. And so when I look at the world through those two lenses, that there's both a poverty of means and a poverty of meaning, this book is about, gosh, I believe the 21st century is really about, and we see this a lot in San Francisco, it's really about economizing the resources we already have, right? So people are economizing their automobiles in San Francisco by reusing them to taxi people around. And people are economizing, their rooms and their house and all the rest of it. I believe that as we add more and more people to the planet, we're going to need to think about how change works from an economical standpoint. And how can we actually be motivated enough to create the changes that we're going to need to see in the world, while also, quite honestly, dealing with our own needs, which is our needs for meaning. So can change in the 21st century look like a way where we solve the first world problems of meaning while also solving the third world problems of means? And so this book is about helping people selfishly go after the thing that they want, which is meaning and purpose, but finding that in other people's problems.
Yeah, that's so good. I love the economizing concept and a new way that people are thinking that they'd never opened their minds to about how we leverage things to serve our communities and to serve others is a great thing to try to apply here. Do you find, I mean, sometimes your message where you're basically saying, look, part of reshaping the world means doing the thing that serves others and maybe doesn't serve your own interest, even though you benefit from it. When you're in corporate environments talking about this sort of thing, do company cultures these days get nervous about that? Because you're going to end up having like 500 employees that are saying, hey, I want to quit. I want to go just pursue my purpose and the thing I'm burdened about, you know, or are they excited about this because it's really bringing a new dimension to how holistic. They're trying to create a workplace in their environments.
I don't sit in front of any company or executive without having something to offer them. I never come needy. That's one thing that we've had to learn to be able to solve for the problem of modern day slavery, is that if we actually want to change it at scale, which despite all the enthusiasm we've seen over the last few years, quite frankly, there isn't a lot of donations coming in to fix this. I think as people are scratching their heads trying to figure out how to fix it, the reality is our system's broken. Whether it comes to sex slavery and the demand side, or forced labor in our products on the demand side, our systems aren't working the way that they should. The way that we treat each other isn't working well. We need to look at these challenges through a systems-based approach. And so, you can't just sit in front of a company and say, make your supply chain and all your products slave-free. It's absolutely impossible to do so. But for us, we had to figure out, well, how can we bring something of value to the business community that can help them run their businesses better, and maybe even provide, maybe, we're not leading with this, but provide those who use the thing that we offer them, provide them some meaning and some purpose. Once we started figuring that out, we realized that the best place for someone to change the world is right where they're at, right from their cubicle. If we can give them the tools, companies the tools to change the world and actually change slavery and supply chains, then not only could we help their business run better, and we say our tagline is at my company called Made in a Free World, our tagline is we help companies buy better. If we can help them do something they're already doing and doing it better, we're going to bring a value to that company, but we're also going to bring something, and I've seen it. I've seen it over and over when I go speak at, your conference is a lot of fun. I also go to some not super fun conferences called procurement conferences. And, it's really super technical. You know me, I'm kind of like artistic, and I'm walking around with a bunch of suits. And they'll walk up to me with tears in their eyes because they're working with us and they're making a difference in the world from their cubicle. That is just pure magic. And I just believe that changing the world doesn't have to be an event or a mountaintop experience. It just needs to be something that's sifted into our lives. And if we can, as quote unquote activists and artists, if we can create things that others can use inside of their own lives, then we can create change at scale. And to me, that is what's promoting the common good, is you can make it something that anyone can use. They don't have to go somewhere or be something in order to create change from inside of their own lives.
Yeah, it's good. And just in closing, Justin, I'm thinking of the 25-year-old listening to this, the college student, as you're in San Francisco and in the center of sort of tech and innovation in the world. There's they call it the Zuckerberg effect, the idea that by the time I'm 25, I needed to have made either a gazillion dollars or I needed to have changed the world in a significant way that people recognize and notice. And if I haven't done that by age 25, maybe I'm not living up to all that I'm supposed to be. And there's this comparison thing that happens. How do you speak to that, 25-year-old who is just growing up in a new day and a new time in a social media world where it's all about personal branding and trying to make a name for themselves? How do you calm that down a little bit to push them down a more virtuous path?
I think some of it's happening. I think some from that age group are healing themselves by recognizing and calling out that, constant campaigns for affirmation isn't where it's at.
Right.
I think every era, and I think the digital era is ready for a grunge era where you fight back against that. But I will say that in every push, whether it's, trying to make be a billionaire by 30 or solve a big problem by the time you're 35, I think that every generation has to reckon with its own path towards authenticity. And I think we all know what authenticity is, no matter how much noise is around us. And I think that part of understanding what your story is going to be ahead of you is being able to reckon with the story that you already have. And even I've had to do that. I'm older too, and I've had to recognize, there's a lot of things that I missed, a lot of things I didn't get to do that I wanted to. But am I going to see those as losses, or am I going to see those disappointments as plot points towards a bigger story? And I get to live a story today that I would have never, ever, ever, ever written for myself. And some of it's really cool, some of it's really hard, but it's very interesting. And all the disappointments, I don't want to say that they are a joy to go through, but if we give them permission in our life to be something that points us towards purpose, they can. And I would say that to any 25-year-old. And I've got lots of I've got the same demo working for me in my company is just don't be afraid of disappointment. Yeah. Please find go and be disappointment and fail and fail and fail. It's the only way that you're going to get anywhere interesting.
Yeah, that's so good. Justin, thank you for your continued great work. I can't wait to see how your energy is going to release so many other people to run after these good and just and righteous things. And I'd love to see more and more people just follow you, whether it's on social media or where are your social handles? Where can people keep up with your good work?
Yeah, you can find me at Josh Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N on Instagram and Twitter, Mr. Justin Dillon or Justin Dillon, either one.
Justin, just thank you again for what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for all the good that you curate, Gabe. I'm blessed to be a part of it.
Thank you, man. Well, I hope you enjoyed not only hearing the talk, but then this conversation with Justin, truly somebody who's getting it done in all kinds of incredible ways. I do encourage you, go out and get his book, A Selfish Plan to Change the World. You'll be inspired by it. It's really well written. So many awesome stories and so many ways to inspire not only yourself, but think about your teenagers or college students or those around you who are trying to figure out what to do about their career, what to do about their calling. How do they make sense of all of this? And I think you'll find in this book, in the page of this book, some really encouraging ways to inspire them to think creatively about how to solve problems in the world and how we're all meant to do that. So until next time, I'm Gabe Lyons, and we look forward to being together next week. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.